Welcome to the Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
We are settling in now for one of our favorite, if not our very favorite show of the year, when we talk about food and wine for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday.
Indeed. We are joined this year by two of Park City's consummate professionals who envelop us in their joy and expertise for their craft.
Chef Joe Saladega of Savory Kitchen and Kirsten Fox of the Fox School of Wine will lead us again for the umpteenth year in a row through some fun, innovative, and tasty choices for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. Kirsten and Joe, welcome back to the Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having us again.
Yes, great to be here. Always fun.
Well, it is fun. And even though it's, you know, 9 a.m, we taped this show, actually, so the wine that may or may not have been consumed was not done at 9 a.m. So let's start off by setting the mood. Joe, you set the mood really well because you love Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
I know this about you.
And so. Parties.
And
Thanksgivings
parties.
And parties, that go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And family, friends. So, yeah, I would say, you know, what better way to start off a wonderful holiday than welcoming people to your home with some random appetizers?
Absolutely. Well, let's just get right into it then. Random appetizers. I feel like they're not random.
Well,
they're very carefully curated by you.
Correct. And my wonderful team of chefs. This year, we were trying something a little different. First off, started with most people's or a lot of people's favorite soup, which would be a French onion, but not so much a soup. We're doing it as a bite in puff pastry. So you've got all the flavors of the caramelized onions and the herbs and the Gruyere cheese wrapped in puff pastry and a nice little bite to eat.
That sounds great.
Right?
So we might as well jump into
it
with Kirsten too. So you love Thanksgiving too, and
I do.
And tell us why first, and then we'll get into which wine we might pair with that puff pastry.
One of the reasons I love Thanksgiving so much is it is an American holiday, and it is about the United States, and I love our country, and it makes me happy that you're not having to worry about whether someone celebrates this or that and being cognizant of their religion or celebratory, you know, world. It's just all of us are celebrating at one time in this amazing country that we live in. And so wine's always good at celebrations. And so after Joe sent me the menu, at the beginning of a meal, one of the things that really helps get your mouth ready for the food is a high acid wine. It makes your mouth water. And as your mouth waters, it actually helps break the food particles in your mouth into smaller molecules. Therefore, you can taste the food better as you are salivating more. And so I've chosen two wines today, both of which are in relatively high acid category. But this first one is really fun because it's going to go with almost everything light on the menu, including these appetizers at the beginning of, you know, when you're greeting your friends and you're still in the kitchen saying, I'll be out in a minute. And you never come out because you're in there sweating. And yeah. But this is called the Stoller Rosé. It's out of the Willamette Valley. And one of the reasons I've become familiar with this wine lately is the first winery in the United States to ever be certified as a LEED Gold winery. And so this company is making a huge effort in all of their preparation of their wines and how they've designed their winery, the tasting room, everything, to be in this world of LEED, which is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. First one to ever be recognized for it, and they are a B Corp. And I had to look up what B meant. I knew it meant something good, but it means, I don't know what it was standing for. It means benefit for all. And so I feel like this is such a great wine on a beautiful day like Thanksgiving, honoring the United States, to have to celebrate this winery and to enjoy their rosé, which is a rosé of Pinot Noir. And it's just beautiful with many of the foods that we're going to be talking about today on Joe's menu.
Very cool.
I love it. And I don't know too much about the industrial side of the wine world, but is wine typically, are wineries tough on the environment? Is this something that is was a challenge for them to create the LEED certification, do you think?
I think that because the goal is good tasting wine in the end, there are people that skip making the environment a focus, and some people that really do keep it in mind. And I think as a winery, you have to have that good product out the end. Mm-hmm. And so the insurance of that is using chemicals or using standard procedures to make sure the plants are perfectly healthy in that, where if you're doing this type of emphasis on the environment, it's going to be more work. And mm-hmm. so I think that is one of the reasons that it's harder. In this case, they built the building with gravity flow and energy efficient systems. The charging stations in the tasting room parking lot, so that when people come in with energy efficient vehicles, nice. They can charge them. This kind of thing. And being a B Corp, they are basically, and they are a company set up for operations for the force of good. And so they're to keep social, environmental, and their employees and people in all in focus at the same time. So I really feel like it's a fun wine, and it's an American wine. It's also a gold medal winning wine in my mind. We offer this wine at our new gold medal wines tour at the Utah Olympic Park. And so all the wines have won gold, and in this case, their LEED gold certification is amazing. So
it's
great.
Thank you. Turning to you, Joe. So I agree with Kirsten's description of what's happening in the kitchen. When we have people over, I am usually rushing around and trying to make sure everything comes out hot and it looks nice. And it's important for me as a hostess to, you know, just feel like it's presenting nicely. But do you have any suggestions for the type of things that maybe can be during a cocktail hour, the foods that you can have that aren't as labor intensive or last minute intensive?
Oh, for sure. So part of these appetizers that we've got today to talk about is that they can be made ahead of time.
Oh, nice.
And when you can do them the night before, so all you need to do is maybe shuffle them through the oven real quick and then put them out on a nice platter, make everyone happy. So another one that we've got is a cranberry whipped feta with chili herb oil and toasted pistachios on a baguette. Mm. And who doesn't love baguette?
Or a gluten-free cracker.
Totally.
Should you be a gluten-free person like me?
And I would go gluten-free crackers over a bread for sure.
I would agree with that.
We haven't really had a lot of great luck with the breads, but that's something that you can like throw on in the broiler real fast, give a nice little melt, or even just do it cold. It would go over really well. And then an artichoke stuffed cremini with spinach. So it's almost like a spinach artichoke dip inside the cremini mushroom. A little fresh mozzarella and some breadcrumbs on top, unless you are gluten-free. And you can leave those off, except you can do a gluten-free panko.
Are not bad.
Yeah,
they're not bad.
They're actually really good, and it would give it a little texture. But same thing, that can be made ahead of time, quick shuffle through the oven. You could even cook it off the day before, so you just have to take the chill off of it when you're serving it. And then the sausage rolls, because chances are you're going to have some men in the house that want to eat some meat. So the sausage roll is actually wrapped in a puff pastry, and it's, ancho sage sausage and a little whole grain mustard dip and just almost traditional sausage ball.
Have they ever come up with a gluten-free puff pastry, or is that just not going to happen?
They have, and I do not want to let this be dominated by gluten-freeness because it's such a pain. But they do. You can buy it at Whole Foods usually, and it's not bad. It's
and
not bad
at all. You could do, like, the French onion soup bite would be really good in phyllo, and you can get a phyllo that's gluten-free as well. That's really nice. The big trick to the puff pastry is the fat. Butter and folding. So I think that if you're using a decent mix, or if the company that's making it is using a decent mix, it's going to come out good. All those things could be done both ways. But the nice thing is that stuff's out on your counter.
Nice.
Your guests are enjoying beverages, enjoying themselves. Easy peasy, right?
And you can actually have a conversation.
Totally.
With them.
Because as you are slaving in the kitchen over your sides and such, your turkey's in the oven all day. So that's not a time-consuming thing necessarily.
So this goes back to cooking 101, but I heard you say, Joe, that you clean as you go. I don't think everyone does that.
That's a habit of the trait, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just in our kitchen, professional kitchen, we all do our own dishes. We don't have a full-time dishwasher. So you get really efficient because you know you're cleaning up your own stuff. And then we all will give each other a hard time if we're taking care of their dishes. So you get really
good about it. You become conditioned. Mm-hmm. Are there any other little tips like that, that as you observe people cooking, lay people, that you say, oh, if only they knew this. It's just such a basic thing.
I have to bite my tongue. Most people don't want to hear
your tongue.
It, right?
I know, true. We want to hear it.
We want to hear it.
Fair.
Go job.
However, if you were in the kitchen at the time, you would not want to hear it. You know, it's awareness more than anything. Most things, a minute or two isn't going to kill you or kill the food that you've got on the stove. Watch your temps. We cook with gas in our house. I think most people do, but a lot of people like electric. Electric's a harder to dial down and like, I'm going to put it on a simmer. Well, you kind of have to watch it closely because it's not on off like fire would be. So with our house, you know, you can turn it down, you can step away, rinse out your pans, clean stuff up, put it away. Nothing worse than putting stuff down on your counter and you're covered with flour and cut vegetable ends and whatever it
is. So you've been to my kitchen? Yeah. Is this what you're saying, Joe?
That's my kitchen at home on any given day. And I think that it's a lot easier for someone that's in the business and been doing it day in and out professionally. You spend 8 hours in a kitchen. It's kind of secondhand nature. I always like to say, don't take for granted what you know, because most people won't know that. So little tricks here and there in cooking, for sure, but always watch when you say them, like how to cut an onion properly.
Okay, how?
Yeah, well, we got to know now.
Oh, fair.
You can't drop that bomb, Joe.
If you're julienning an onion, you want to go with that grain, not against it. When you're cutting it or when you're sautéing it, if you're going against the grain, tip to tail, you know, or you want to go tip to tail, not against. Mm-hmm. And if you do go against and you're cooking, it doesn't cook the same, and it's more fibrous.
This is total news to me.
Right?
Absolutely.
Total news to me, too.
We have a conversation in my kitchen at home at least once a year. It's not like common. No, I mean, went to culinary school. I paid a lot of money to learn how to cut an onion the right way. Although I could have just learned that in any kitchen professionally. So it's like little things like that.
Yeah, those are great little things. Okay, before we move on from appetizers and get back to our wine, there's something I noticed from your menu that I wouldn't have thought to do, and it's the cranberry whipped feta. You put chili herb oil in there. Why wouldn't I think to put cranberry with chili oil? And why does it work so well?
So I guess it's what we do is we do like a compound oil. So we're going to cook those chilies and herbs in the oil slowly. And then we're going to just dress it at the end, drizzle it with it.
Okay.
Gives it a little color, makes the plate look nice, and then won't be too spicy by any means. So you're not worried about, because I know a lot of people don't have high heat tolerances with food.
So just a little kick?
As much or as little as you want, depending on the type of chilies you want to use. We'd go use an ancho, most likely, in that. And then again, any chili, depending on when it's picked, is going to be hotter than another one. For instance, the jalapeno I ate the other day was extremely hot. I was like, where did this come from? I eat them all the time.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought they had kind of
standardized.
Yeah, right. So no, they weren't so hot.
Depends on when they're picked and depends on, I imagine, sun, ripeness, soil, all, much like grapes.
Yeah, sure.
It affects everything.
Yeah, much like those shishito peppers where you get 1 in 30 or something that will knock your socks off and you'll be so miserable as you're trying to enjoy it. And the others are just really mild.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Joe Saladega. He is the chef and owner of Savory Kitchen, as well as Kirsten Fox, the owner and headmistress of the Fox School of Wine.
It's a way better title than sommelier.
It's way better. Mm-hmm. I can give detention. I can, which is one I met out often in my house.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. So I think many people have kind of the concept of how to let a meal unfold with an appetizer and then a soup or salad and the entree. But should the wines change with each course, or are there some wines that tend to kind of go along with a food group in general, or should people just drink what they want?
Well, absolutely. The third option is always the best. This is about nuances of personal preference. And so if you love whiskey, no one's going to tell you that you should be, you know, what the wine is that you
that
should
be. Oh,
that would be you, yeah. And that's great. And beer or whatever. But in terms of wine, generally, the most important part of food and wine pairing is the weight of the wine needs to be about the same as the weight of the food. And so you don't want, for example, I'll use a really egregious example. You think about Pinot Grigio from Italy, and most of us have had one. Very light, almost watery, if you will. And you take a sip of that, and if you're pairing that with, say, a prime rib, you are not going to taste that wine after that first bite of food. It's just too heavy. If there's when you think about food, you want to think about milk, and it's skim milk, whole milk, and cream. And so if you think about, is my food tonight going to be more skim milk-like? Or is it going to be that light? Or is it going to be more meaty road, it's whole milk kind? Or is it heavy? Potatoes with, you know, lots of cheese and all this. That's more of a, you know, a cream type food. And then you go to your wine and you want your wine to be the same. You want a skim milk, whole milk, and cream to go along with that. So it's, I always say, same weight, great mates. And so that is how you would do a meal. And usually meals, and as Joe's set them up on his menus, meals are typically go from lighter foods into heavier foods along the way.
That was a nice segue. Yes. I was going to ask about when you were speaking about the weight of the wine,
yeah,
and if that was a mouthfeel more than anything.
It is very much a mouthfeel, but it also is alcohol content.
Okay.
Alcohol, higher alcohols will give you a much more viscous feeling in your mouth.
Okay.
So as you move, and hence the lighter mouthfeel wines are generally lighter in alcohol, and then you move into medium weight and heavyweight wines. I mean, say Cabernets, they're up at 15% alcohol. Zinfandels, 15. They're higher alcohol content, which tends to be towards the main course of the meal when there's a little more richness in the food.
For sure.
So yeah, that's good question.
Awesome. So where do tannins kind of fit into that too? Because I'm a little sensitive to tannins. I get real rosy and different things happen, but I do enjoy them. So is that part of the weight or the vibe of the wine as well?
It's a completely separate characteristic. And for anybody that doesn't know what tannins are, have you ever bitten accidentally into a banana skin or a walnut skin where your mouth just dries out and you feel like it's gone super, super sketchy?
It goes like...
It sucks all the moisture out of your mouth. And so tannins are from the grape skins and seeds and also the oak barrels that often wine is aged in. So then I have a saying about tannins, and that is fat and tannins are friends. So tannin, it needs protein in your mouth to bind to. That's why when you accidentally bite into a banana peel or a walnut skin, there's nothing in your mouth. Well, there may be walnut, which will help. But that tannin just binds to all your saliva, which is a protein, and it sucks everything out of your mouth. Well, if you have a beautiful piece of steak in your mouth, or you've got turkey with gravy on it that has fat in it, the tannin will bind to the fat, and then you taste the other compounds, the other flavors in the wine better. And so not only as the meal progresses generally do you get heavier in mouthfeel, you also get heavier in tannins to go with the richness of the later foods in the meal. So did that ask you?
Yes, 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 absolutely.
A nice duck breast would go really well with tannins.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's got much more fat in it than a turkey breast, which is almost nil with fat of fat. So you do have to watch that at Thanksgiving. If you're not putting gravy and such on your turkey, it's going to be a much leaner cut, and you're going to need a lower tannin effect in your mouth of wine. And we can talk about that as we go ahead.
It is just no wonder that you are the head mistress of the Fox School of Wine, because you do a really great job, not just serving up some detention, but explaining this.
Fat and tannins are friends.
Yes, same weights, great mates. Yes, I mean, honestly, I feel like I should have been a third grade teacher in reality, but I never did that. And I now have leftover wine at my house all the time, so it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out.
I know some third grade teachers who might appreciate some leftover wine, honestly.
Definitely.
Hey, going back, I'm picturing our listeners saying, now, what was that? Which was that wine the LEED certified? It is from the Willamette Valley.
It's Willamette Valley. It's called Stoller, Stoller. And it is their Rosé of Pinot Noir. And it is about $20 in our liquor stores. It's available in most liquor stores. They've done a great job with this wine. Yeah.
It's really delicious. So rosé has been so popular in, you know, over the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. I had to stop drinking it very much because it got too sharp or something on my tongue. This one is it's just very drinkable, very smooth. Is that because of the Pinot Noir that's being used to make the rosé? I don't know. The only word, which is, of course, is not an adjective that you all would use in the Fox School of Wine, but I just want to say it's too astringent.
Okay. That's great to know for you. And rosés have been basically millennials. Rosé and Instagram have all grown up together. And not kidding you, Rosé All Day, the hashtag Rosé All Day, in the summer gets like a million hits. Nielsen did a study on the popularity of rosé, and it had risen in 3 years, just right before COVID hit. It had risen 58% in sales volume. And 25% of the rosés that come into the United States, they stop in New York City. They are consumed in New York City. Wow. I mean, I can't begin to tell you. There's Frosé. My son is into wine. They're drinking wines with the bros. It's Brosé.
I am dying.
So funny. And I mean, when you're doing an Instagram post and you've got a really beautiful summer dress on, or you're sitting out with your friends on a porch and this beautiful colored wine is in your glass, it's something fun to post. So it did actually fuel a lot of rosé's popularity. But I think because people were getting on the rosé, liquor stores, it was like every time you went in there, the little rosés were having little rosé babies. It was like there was just racks and racks. And so, part of that is the grape they're using, but part of that is the winemaking, the expertise. And I think a lot of people, like when Merlot was popular and it took a dive in quality in general because everyone was making it because it was so commercially successful.
Also, the movie Sideways did not help Merlot.
No, it didn't, because it was after the Merlot kind of started to really suck. So anyway, there are beautiful Merlots out there, but Rosé was on that bandwagon. And so part of that would have been maybe adding some acid. They may have put some acid introduced into the vat to make it higher acid if they didn't have it. And so you may have tasted some of that. You may have really good palate, Lynn.
Or maybe I just drink really cheap rosé.
No, I was thinking that like $20 a bottle is a little more than I would normally spend. Maybe that's why it's so good.
I see. Okay, well then we will stop this conversation.
I have the advanced.
You
powers.
Have an advanced.
I was thinking
power.
$20 for that bottle is actually
is really
quite
good.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good rosé.
So that's a Magnum. Just kidding.
I think we're all down to the bottom of our glasses, so I think it's time for the next one. I'm going to start pouring.
Okay. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Oh, must you? Okay.
Joe, I have a question for
you.
Yes,
ma'am.
So for me, I think that As my own experience as a cook has grown over the years, what I've noticed the most with other amateur cooks is the lack of acid. It seems like it is just like there are so many great things that people make and they're rich and they're delicious. But that bit of acid is necessary, much as it is with wine, to kind of clear the palate.
A lot of things for sure. One in particular, our chef came into my office today with she was trying something out with a mustard dip for a charcuterie board. And she got this idea to do like a wasabi type mustard. And as I tried it, I was like, wow, that bitterness is like too much, because we were already ready to scrap this idea. And I was like, what is that flavor? Oh, it's wasabi. Okay. And you've already got sweetness in there. That's not going to mellow it out. How much acid did you put in? And she used a little bit of lemon. And I was thinking maybe some orange would work in it. Wasabi is really tough to work with because that's going to mature while it's in there and get stronger. So we might need to go back to the drawing board on it. But I have not tried it since we added the orange. But to your point, that's going to balance out a lot of things. Acid in dressings, acid
in a drizzle, like even.
Yeah, any number of items. Aioli, when you make an aioli, you're using acid in there, not even as a flavor. It also helps if you're an aioli, for people that don't know, is like homemade mayonnaise. So you're using an egg yolk. That acid is going to kind of pasteurize or keep that yolk from going bad, essentially, and you're mixing
kind of cure it a little bit. 100%.
Wow. Yep. You know, it's a key ingredient, and I think, yes, a lot of times people don't even think about it. And little things like zest can make the difference, and even that aroma. So, like, a lot of times we have this appetizer, it's like ratatouille, and we'll do both summer and winter. So it's either, you know, summer vegetables or root vegetables, and we serve it on a endive spear, and that gets a little fresh Romano. Totally gluten-free. but we'll also do zest of lemon and lime. When you wrap that platter and then you open that up, you get a burst of that aroma. And even the aroma is going to change that just by smelling it before you're eating it. It's going to change that profile in your mouth.
I remember there was this restaurant in Chicago that was really fancy schmancy. They would have these dishes where they would take off the cloche and you would have one bite with silk in your hand and one bite with sandpaper in your hand.
Sounds like a linear or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was just super fancy. But this idea that the smells and the senses that we have aren't all in our mouth. You know, they always say like your eyes eat first.
Sight
or whatever,
and smell,
right?
That's what
but it's other things
to
too.
Yeah,
isn't that
sure.
interesting?
If it doesn't smell good, it's not going to taste good.
Yeah.
If it doesn't look good, you're probably already turned off. So there's like that mix to it. And different to wine. Of course, a label can look beautiful, but typically you don't know until you're getting into it. Except sometimes with reds, colors can be way off, I imagine. Is that accurate? And then you'd be like, this is definitely not going to be a good wine. Maybe no?
No, I don't think you can make that generalization. Okay. But I've definitely chosen wine based on label, just because it was the coolest label I've seen.
Fair. Yeah. We need to take a quick underwriting break. And then we'll be back. I really like this topic about acid. And we'll take that into more talk of wine when we return.